This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 283, Virtual Cloaks. Welcome, everybody, to GamesAtWork.biz. This is not your regular or always host. This is Andy Piper here, coming to you from London in the UK. It's a very warm Friday evening here, and I'm delighted to be back with you. I'm sorry that I missed a number of months of quarantine recordings, but I'm very, very excited to be with my friend Michael Martin.
Andy, I'm delighted to have you back. I'm sure when I say we, you know, everyone's delighted to have you back too. This is Michael Martin. I'm coming to you from Chapel Hill, North Carolina in the U.S. It's warm here as well, but, you know, when you say warm, that's that traditional British warm.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
pouring with rain.
Above 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is pretty warm. Pretty much. And we had a very warm weekend last weekend as well. But, yeah, I'm not. I shouldn't complain. My wife certainly isn't complaining, so. So we've got some fun stuff all to do with, as the title may indicate, virtual things, which is not unknown for our show, starting with some virtual property tours, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first one is a BBC article, and this one was particularly intriguing to me because when we sold our house in one part of Chapel Hill, moved to another part of Chapel Hill, we did something like this. And what this is was the ability to go into a home, take a virtual 3D set of photos, and then create essentially what was like a virtual dollhouse. So you could kind of zoom out, and you could look at the structure of the home, and you could visit it remotely over the web, whether it was through a VR lens type structure or just directly on a phone or laptop or through a browser window. And the point of this article is really talking about how virtual house hunting is exploding now because people can't or won't or shouldn't, pick your favorite term, go into interior spaces one after the other. And it's a great way to explore what a home looks like.
Yeah, I mean, and I think this is a classic case of, you know, virtual tours, technology being used in a sensible way where you physically can't visit and touch and check out properties. It's interesting, you know, it says here, you know, just 8% of Zoopla's listings have the virtual tour option. But of course, there's bound to be, in a circumstance like the one we're currently in, a lot of challenges with doing this properly and doing this well. And of course, if it's a virtual tour, do you get to see arguably the dark sides that you might see in person, right? Or you might, you know, when you turn over the edge of a carpet or, you know, a curtain or something, that you see the thing that the property seller has been desperately trying to conceal from you, which of course this is a way for them to do this perfectly. But it is very interesting to see this technology being applied in this way.
You know, what gets me thinking is about the newest capabilities from the iPad with the LiDAR capability, the improved camera and the like, and that you don't necessarily need to have a very expensive set of kit to be able to do this. You will likely be able to do this with a phone that can determine the spatial qualities of what you're looking at and then build those models on the fly. So today it's expensive. Tomorrow it probably will.
And the other thing I find fascinating about this story as you read through it is there's a reference to a company called Matterport that started as a company that basically took the Xbox camera, the Kinect, and used that and then re-engineered that into their own device, and now they have bundled the whole thing down onto an iPhone, right? So it all ties together. In terms of like the history of how these things have happened. It did remind me, well, since we started talking before the show about property and tours, of one of my co-workers actually, who recently went viral here in the UK because they found a particular property listing near them in London It's a small apartment, relatively small apartment, but it's a very bizarre, one of a kind apartment that went viral about a week or so ago. And I'm sure I'll find an article to share on the show notes. A two-bedroom flat.
Cool.
That has a luxury private swimming pool, sauna, and shower in the basement. And the hilarious part was, within about an hour of it going viral, the asking price had shot up, presumably because the agents had seen all of these, you know, hits on the website, but they were being generated from people sharing the story on social media rather than actually people who really, really wanted this particular property. It's quite an unusual location. But the story actually went on because my colleague posted, you know, I need to know who built this, and then ended up connecting with, I believe, the children of the property developer on social media, and people that had gone to view it. It was a crazy story.
Oh, that's too funny.
I've never gone viral, but I'm aware of on Twitter or otherwise, but I found it funny when that was shared.
Well, here's hoping you don't go viral for all the right reasons.
Exactly.
You know, this all started around games and game technology and using it for other purposes. So it's funny how that connects. The next story we have is one from Vogue, and you know, ordinarily we don't talk a lot about fashion on this show. Yeah, we don't. And when we do talk about clothing and wearables and that sort of thing, we're typically talking about IoT devices, or we're talking about things that you would buy for in-game purposes. This particular article is talking about virtual fashion that can be added to real pictures and that people will pay for. So if you are an Instagram fan and you would like to have something new and unique, what would be the right word from Hitchhiker's Guide? Improbable, right? So you can deal with physics that can't exist in the real world. You could buy clothing that you could virtually put on for a picture and then share it. And this is a new twist, you know, a very new twist.
And one thing I wasn't clear on from reading this was the details of the tech in terms of how they dress you up. I mean, again, we've spoken about LiDAR and things like that. I remember probably about 18 months ago, there was a company that would sell you essentially it was one of those, almost those virtual capture suits that they use in games and the movies with the little ping pong balls, except it was essentially a black outfit with little dots on. And then the idea was you would [S2] Right. [S1] Be able to take a picture of yourself with your phone from the right distance, and then they would be able to bespoke make outfits for you that met your exact measurements. But I think as the technology starts to be built directly into the devices rather than requiring you to necessarily have all of the motion capture, all of the sizing stuff attached to you, I just found this fascinating in terms of how they do this realistically, in a way that makes physical clothes, you know, real or look so natural. It's amazing and very cool. And as, again, we spoke about in our pre-show chat, it's this isn't Second Life rezzing outfits onto 3D rendered models. This is being done into real world photos, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, it's incredible when you think about it this way, and very much like other demand creation things. And I'm thinking about Beanie Babies and a variety of other things. The Tribute Brand website, just taking a peek at it right now, there are a number of fashions that are no longer available. They've sold out, which for a digital good,
it's crazy, isn't it?
How do you sell out of a piece of software? Well, you're doing that for demand purposes, absolutely. Right? It's for uniqueness, for special. So this is such a neat twist on something we've been taking now for granted for so many years about, yeah, of course, you want to buy a skin for Animal Crossing or whatever.
I have a 13th Doctor outfit of my Animal Crossing. Whenever I paste a screenshot, people are like, "Are you Doctor Who?" I'm like, "Yes, I am. Yes, yes, I am." Quite proud of that. I mean, I love it. I think it's Jen Zor is the lady's or the user's name who designed this particular outfit. So I can't take any credit other than I'm wearing that person's design. But yeah, it's pretty neat.
So we've talked about cloaks in one way, in the fashion sense. Now let's go, not quite Star Wars, but maybe it's a little Romulan-esque, right? Let's talk about cloaking.
So you've gone from Star Wars to Star Trek.
For AI.
Then already ruined.
Yes. Sorry, I'm just jumping at every venue. Why not? You know, let's just throw every caution to the wind. So I've seen a variety of articles this week from everything from MIT to The Verge to others about using a tool called Fox to essentially add data to a facial recognition database that will confuse said database and make it more difficult to have you identified precisely as you. And the way that it works from the articles that I've read so far, my understanding is that it adds differences, subtle, small differences that are not necessarily noticeable by the human eye, but are very noticeable by the way the facial recognition algorithms work, to be able to demonstrate that a picture of you is not you because of the way that the data has been added to the machine learning model. And it was funny to me that they used an example of the Queen as something that you could see here. And if I look at them, there are a few things that I can't quite put my finger on.
Exactly. It's one of those.
It looks a little different.
It's almost uncanny valley type, trying to spot the gaps or the differences. Yeah, I mean, there are some subtle differences. Very challenging, I think, in both directions, in terms of whether or not you accept that people have the technology to recognize faces and match things up, versus also the ability to then change that artificially, because that's what this software is obviously doing. I think the privacy conversation obviously is ongoing and important. I think it's it is a fascinating set of technology that they're talking about here. I'm not sure where I sit in terms of the intentional deception versus the intentional detection, if that makes sense. It's very interesting.
My sense is, And the article talks a little bit about this. So they use the example of Facebook, about companies like Facebook potentially incorporating the technology and that run through a filter. So if you and I were socially distanced, but, you know, taking pictures either of one another or selfies of ourselves, and then that were to be published through a social media platform, in theory, it could be run through a filter that would alter our photos just a little bit, so that whatever scraper might come along to say, this is Andy, this is Michael, would now pick up those pictures. And because of the additions now to that scraper machine learning structure, it would make it more difficult to identify the real Andy or the real Michael.
But the
later.
Other flip side of this, and if you maybe pivot it slightly away from facial, but that's actually still very relevant, is the ability for people to pass off work as their own and unique. So there's a flip side to the whole discussion here, which is that, you know, it's incredibly easy for me to throw up a social media account purporting to be an individual, using that individual's likeness at a very, very close but not exact level, and make it very difficult to actually determine whether or not those things are real. So there's this is why I'm kind of on the fence here a little bit at the moment. These are some challenges that I've dealt with myself in the recent past, in terms of understanding how this these kinds of technology can be used. One thing that I'm gonna move us along, because I'm aware that we don't have a lot of time today.
Time-wise.
Unfortunately, we're without Michael as well. But one thing that you just showed me this afternoon, this evening, my time, and I thought I had heard of it, but I wasn't familiar with it, is a platform called Mm-hmm. Tell me, and the listeners, if you may, a tiny bit about that, because it looked very cool and I want to play with it now.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mm-hmm was something that we noticed a couple of weeks ago, and they're still in a beta environment, and I was delighted to see an invite come my way, and it looks like they're opening up a little bit more broadly.
I knew I'd heard of it. It's because I listened to this show. There we go. That's how I knew about it.
You're ahead of the
course,
game.
As one of the lead presenters of this show, of course you got an invite.
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea behind this is we're doing so much from a virtual perspective and a distance perspective, and whether you're using one or the other technologies to screencast yourself and collaborate with others, we're basically boxes, you know, maybe Brady Bunch style, tic-tac-toe style on the screen, and that gets a little boring after a while. So rather than just being a head in the box, Mm-hmm is a set of capability that allows you to record, you know, a little demo of something, like, you know, maybe if we're talking about board games or if we're talking about a work topic or whatever, you could record it or you could screencast it, and you could manipulate the size of your face and shoulders and the like and bring it down to a small corner. You could expand up to be the full screen. It could have an over the shoulder kind of view like you see from newscasters and the like. So it lets you vary up a number of things. I've not yet had the chance to play with it other than maybe the first 90 seconds or so while we were talking through the pre-show. So
I will try to. One of the other things, very, very small details that caught my attention, is when I scrolled to the very bottom of the page and looked at the bottom right-hand corner, it's an All Turtles company. Which I just loved,
all the way down.
Exactly, as a reference. So I think they've already got my attention. Talking of things,
awesome. So let's keep going.
Other things that get my attention. How are your kittens?
Oh, so the foster kittens we have, they're doing well. They are due for their first set of shots soon, so they have no idea what's coming. They're upstairs. They're kind of sequestered in a safe spot so that they don't get trapped.
If you want to see kittens right now, Michael, that's the question.
Well, if I wanted to see kittens right now, I would just go onto my camera roll on my phone and I'd look. But if I wanted to entertain my kittens, I might turn them on to Meowflix, which is Netflix for felines.
Amazing.
and the example that they're showing, you know, right at the beginning here is a little bit of some Star Wars lightsaber action between a couple of cats. There's the Meowtrix, you know, instead of the Matrix, and much more that will keep your cat entertained and, you know, you as well, right? Spend time with your cats.
I am loving it. I know a lot of cat friends that I will be sharing this with almost immediately when we finish recording.
Eat per leap. I love this. So Andy, as we're kind of rounding things out, I've got a couple of games that I'm excited about. So I wanted to share those with you and by extension with our broader audience. So one that I've just ordered because it just came available, pre-orders are going to be shipping in a couple of weeks here, is a game from Stonemaier Games called Pendulum. And I'm very intrigued about it. I've watched a little bit of the video around it. It is a game that is, they're calling it a turnless, asymmetric worker placement time optimization game, where you are not competing against the clock in a frantic kind of rate, but you are playing your way through it, determining how to optimize based on what's happening for you, what's happening for others in the game. And, I'm really intrigued by it. I can't wait to read the rules in detail, see the meeples and everything set up and give it a shot.
It looks really nice. So, I must say that a lot of my game purchases do do often revolve around how pretty things look. And this one does look really, really nice. And also, I mean, it's referencing other games I enjoy, such as Seven Wonders, in the description. So that looks very promising. What else have you? Did you order something else, or is this is the main one?
No. Well, this one's coming, and I ordered this also on the basis of this is the same maker of Wingspan, which has got some really cool games, really cool gameplay, and something that was a major award winner. I think it was
the Spiel des Jahres. I haven't played Wingspan yet. It's been on my list for a long time. Well, a long time. It's only a year old. I was reading a book within the last week, which refers to Wingspan as a future classic. I've been diving more and more deeply and acquiring more and more micro expansions to Carcassonne, the tile placing medieval French game, which I've literally been reading a book of Carcassonne strategy and tactics, and another book called Ticket to Carcassonne, which is.
It's like Ticket to Ride, but it's basically kind of a blend.
The book is essentially an introduction to modern board gaming, and that's actually one of the places where Wingspan was referenced. So it's quite a recent book that it was this English chap who's explaining, you know, the different genres and different, you know, ways into the hobby. Seeing Wingspan in that list on that page that you've shared for Pendulum as well brought that to mind. So. Yeah, I imagine that there will be more than one game of Carcassonne this weekend. You get your Board Game Geek account properly set up, profile set up, you can start recording your plays. There's a really good iOS app actually called BG Stats, which syncs with Board Game Geek and lets you record your plays and who played and scores and stuff.
Oh, neat!
Board Game Geek has got its own API as a website that I've played around with in Python, but the BG Stats app, I must say, is we don't normally do an app of the week on this show, but there is a small amount of cost to it. I think $3 or $4 or something, but it's a really nice app, I must admit. As I've become more and more obsessive about managing my board gaming hobby, so.
Well, I'll have to get a look into that, and yes, I'm remiss on being a formal member of Board Game Geek, but I do have a link to a game that did arrive this week. It was a Kickstarter. It was by the creators of Unstable Unicorns, famous game from with our family. It's called Here to Slay, and it's a card-based game, although I did get the meeples for it, too, because I thought they were super cool, and that arrived just 2 days ago. So I'm eager to get that out of the box and set it up with the kids and the fam and have at it.
Enjoy. So
that's the plan, and I'm sticking to it.
On that note, I am going to go and find myself a colder location than sitting in front of a monitor with lots of lighting around me to cool down this evening. Wonderful to hang out with you as always, Michael. And thank you for having me back.
And same here.
Be back again very soon.
I would love that. And to everybody out there, stay cool, stay safe, and don't go viral.
See ya. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.